Welcome to the 26th episode of Who's Editing, a thought experiment in which my guest and I appoint ourselves editors of a comic book line at DC Comics. But the joke's on us because we can only use the characters of a specific issue of Who's Who, and in fact, must use them. I'm Siskoid. I'll let you in on all the rules. But first, my guest with which to create a line of books based on Who's Who number 26, Inza Morgenstar, also known online as the 108th Sage. Hi, Inza.
Hey there. This is really weird to be here.
Is it weird?
It's kind of weird. I've been hearing your voice for so many years in my earbuds, and now I actually get to respond to you and talk back.
I believe the number of years would be 9 at this point, 8 or 9.
Yeah. That long.
Yeah, and I've seen you commenting or supporting the shows ever since the beginning, so thank you for that, and it's great to have you on one of my shows, finally.
I know, right? I feel like I'm terrible at feedback, because so many times I'm thinking of the comment I would love to put in if I weren't driving or somehow otherwise occupied at the moment,
right?
And then I never actually put the comment in, so it is nice that I do occasionally get it through and people notice that I'm there.
And we're getting you just under the wire, because this is the final issue of the original run of Who's Who. I did want a woman on the Wonder Woman issue, so that worked out well for you.
Yay. I must admit that this was the issue I wanted to do anyway, because very early in this show's run, I was like, this is such a weird concept. How could you possibly organize a universe alphabetically? Like, what? And then, like, very soon after, I was like, oh my goodness, I need to do this so bad. But I guess I'd have to wait till the loose leaf edition, because otherwise it'd be like, oh wait, the final issue has characters that aren't just alphabetical, huh? And so that was kind of where it all started.
It gives you a little more variety in terms of, like, I often rename titles just because I don't want them to be all in the one same section of the fictional comic book store, you know. Were there challenges to this one, even though there is maybe more of a scope, a breadth of characters because of that little appendix?
I mean, there definitely were challenges. I'm not positive how many of them were specifically related to the way the issue was set up. The way the issue was set up, in a way, was actually really useful because of the clumps of characters. But that's often the way it is. We're like, oh, wow, This issue has a lot of space characters or Legion characters or whatever. This one was interesting the way there were little clumps of like, oh, there's the Wonder characters and the Magic characters and the silly characters and stuff. And so I definitely played with that aspect of it, as you'll soon see.
A lot of humor characters in this one compared to some of the other issues. And you're right, the whole Wonder Woman concept universe. And that's, I for me, that was the difficulty, Wonder Woman, because there's something intimidating about making decisions for an iconic character, but also an iconic character that's been so badly handled over the years. I don't know if you agree with me, but yeah, I've had trouble with a lot of Wonder Woman runs. So now it's my turn. Ooh.
Yep. I mean, it's one of the reasons I'm glad I'm an editor and not one of the writers. Because I'm glad that I can come up with the idea and hand it off to people better equipped for it than me.
Curious to see how that shakes out. So one more time, here are the rules. Each episode of Who's Editing will go by. Our line of books must include a monthly series for every hero, character, or team featured, as well as any non-HQ locations. If two characters share an entry, and it does happen here, we can give either a series, only one of them a series, or put them in the same series if we're not insane. We can give a villain or other entry their own series if we absolutely feel the need to, but we can only do that for a single villain. Imagine we're coming back from some crisis or other, but so we can reboot characters or use any continuities version. It's up to us. Titles don't have to match the entries. Note that myself and Inza are each pitching our own ideas, so we'll end up with two possible lines of books. And listeners, you decide which books you're actually going to read, and we'll actually play that game as well. We'll have just enough money to buy one title from the other editor's line. Okay, let's get my piece of paper. Take notes. Before we get into it, did you have a strategy for this?
Yes. And my strategy was actually like shaped early on by the first entry.
Oh.
And then, like you were saying, Wonder Woman kind of posed a problem. She ended up posing a problem for me too, or more to the point, the idea of Wonder, which we'll see in a minute. And then that problem caused an interesting pivot, which changed the entire way I was doing everything, which is interesting. So we'll get to that as we go.
Okay, that's super interesting. I didn't really have a strategy. I thought, well, this is the last one. Let's just give myself some freedom. You know, it's a hodgepodge of genres and tones and approaches.
Indeed.
We'll see. We'll see how that works out for me. With issue 26 of Who's Who, we have to include a minimum of 17 books in our line and a maximum of 19. I'm going to hand it off to you first, of course. We'll do a bit of back and forth in entry order, but we'll keep our bonus villain series for the end if we have one. And we start with one of those non-HQ locations, and that's Wizard World. So if this is going to be what causes, you know, sends you spinning towards your strategy, let's hear it. What did you do with Wizard World?
Okay, so I'm going to start with a brief blurb about what didn't happen. Wow, Wizard World. And then, of course, there's War World floating out there in the DC universe. And then there's all these wonders. So what about a wonder world? And then what about all these like weapony, war-y characters like Dragon Sword and Cannon and Saber and war and weapon? And but then there's all these silly characters. So what about like, oh, and then there's Wyoming. So maybe there's like war and wonder and wizard and whimsy and Wyoming, all these different worlds out there. And then I really quickly realized that Wyoming shouldn't be a whole world. And I just dropped that. But then we'll get to the Wonder One problem eventually, but eventually I dropped that idea of there being these alternate, separate, split-off realities and went with the idea that instead we're dealing with Weft World, which is the title of the comic book, or perhaps Weft World Weekly, because I was thinking of having it be more of an Action Comics Weekly style anthology where you're getting little drips and drabs of a little drips of different stories from all over this world, which is so vastly different than the DC universe we are familiar with. Presaging event is caused by some kind of mysterious, hyper powerful, but also kind of naive entity, vaguely akin to the Beyonder from the Secret Wars original line, where the Beyonder was like, I'm confused by these concepts of good and evil. Whereas not such a binary thinking, but more, I'm confused by these concepts of like nostalgia and idealism and grittiness and things like that. And like, it basically just comes across our conception of how we divide and subdivide and categorize reality. And it just breaks our reality into all these little messy pieces and causes basically Earth to become Weft World, so that suddenly a large swath of America is like turned into funny animal characters and is like an idealized version of like basically funny animal version of reality and like idealized nostalgia-esque kind of stuff. And then another part of the world is like this grim and gritty war world-esque warlords dominating and people fighting resistance fights. And other parts are like these magical little idealistic utopias that are rapidly shrinking as the war world people encroach upon them. And that is Weft World. Lots of different little stories, lots of different snapshots of different parts of the globe. Other titles will sometimes spill over into this, or you'll see aspects of those titles that you don't know about unless you're reading this title too. That stuff.
As a Torg player, I don't know if you know the role-playing game, but as a Torg player, this is right up my alley, actually. You know, that this I've even done this. In Torg, there's no cartoon reality, but I had to use it. I had to create my own Toontown, and then my players had to get through that as well. You know, there are cartoon realities out there. So this is an interesting approach that's a lot like, makes me think of the Secret Wars Battle World thing that they did like more recently, where all the what-ifs just became this one else-worlded planet with different countries that had different realities to it. That's a fun way to use the multiverse.
Yep, definitely both of those are an inspiration for this kind of thing, yes.
For Wizard World myself, I'm thinking more of the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon, but in reverse. So Wizard World is a theme park that has just opened in the here and now, but it's populated by people from a fantasy realm. The entry says Ancient Skartaris, so okay, that's fine. They've crossed over and are trapped on Earth. The comic would follow the small community of fantastical carnies as they welcome mundanes to their various attractions. Some of them are good guys, our protagonists. Others not so good, and the goodies have to police them. But for some reason, they're unable to leave the fairgrounds, but for one exception, which we'll get to later. So they have to make do. In short, we might call this Nightmare Alley meets Fables.
That's really neat. I am such a big fan of like stories about carny life and like the people on the outskirts of society that are using why people don't like them to entertain the people that don't like them kind of thing. I don't know, just like those stories have always interested me. And like one of my favorite episodes of Batman, the animated series, was the one where Killer Croc goes off and joins the circus effectively.
Let's get into the Wonders. And Wonder Girl is our first character from that world. At this point, she's called Donna Troy. So that's going to be the name of the comic. And I like her in the black Starfield version of this particular costume with the lasso and having been raised as an Amazon after being rescued from a child trafficking ring by the Amazons. Though she doesn't have a secret identity, in her civilian life, she's teaching photography at NYU, where she's been a bit of a feminist icon to the girls on campus. And she has a would-be teacher's pet called Terry Long, thanks to whatever crisis. I'm sort of reversing the old dynamic and reversing, since this Terry is a woman. So Donna may be bi in this series. And it's a series that is at least as much about her impact on campus as it is about superheroics. And I want to develop the students and the faculty of the visual arts department as a vibrant microcosm that opens Donna up to soap opera and art school shenanigans, which I think I know a little bit about. Not that I'm writing this, of course.
That does sound fun. Like the campus life, slice of life thing, but with, you know, a more up-to-date version of Donna Troy and Terry Long.
Right. They did something like this with Bad Girl for a little while, and I quite enjoyed it. So similar to that. What did you do with Wonder Girl?
Well, I added an S, so it's Wonder Girls. I am a huge fan of the Bombshells series by Marguerite Bennett.
Sure.
I cannot remember the artist right now, and I feel bad about that. But basically, I would just assign those two people, everyone who worked on that book, to this book and make it kind of a globe-trotting sapphic adventure. Just lots of queerness, lots of interesting slight tilts on a character that you might already be familiar with, taking advantage of the fact that the weft winds are like flowing through the world and changing things, but also really bringing in the concept of wonder. And this is where I'm going to start weaving in some of the ideas behind the weft world. So it's not just that this person or this entity, whatever this is, has wondered about all these different things and done all this weirdness. But there are actually, they've unleashed these forces upon the world. And it's kind of inspired by the Speed Force, but also like the Still Force and the Sage Force and all that other stuff they did later that I haven't really read about other than in Wikipedia and seeing on that season of The Flash. But it's still inspired by that. One of the things is the Wonder Force. The Wonder Force is basically the ultimate, whatever the word is, utopian vision slash belief that, no, we can fix this. We can do better. And it's kind of that, the endpoint light at the end of the tunnel, anchor in the beloved community. Are you familiar with the term beloved community? It was repopularized by Martin Luther King Jr., but he was not the person that came up with the concept. And I cannot remember that guy's name right now. But the idea is that we cannot all be free until everyone is free. There is no us and them. Any kind of us and them thinking is eventually just going to stop us from attaining our goal of beloved community. We need to be working towards the idea that the reason why people are opposing us in our quest for freedom and quest for equality and quest for all this is because of improper balance of incentives and understandings and things. And we need to be increasing people's understanding and increasing people's empathy and things like that. And so the Wonder Girls are people that are just filled with the spirit of like, no, we can do better. We can go out there and solve problems in a way that is not going to keep perpetuating the problems. We're going to go out there and try to break cycles of oppression, cycles of stupidity, cycles of hurt people, hurting people, hurting people, hurting people, etc. And so that's kind of the Wonder Force in general. But the Wonder Girls are kind of like a ragtag group of lots of different, well, mostly assigned female at birth slash trans feminine, like, you know, people on that end of the gender presentation spectrum, I guess, who are very much just like, nope, we are going to be boots on the ground getting out there. So this is going to be a title that sort of like Young Justice or Bombshells is going to introduce lots of different characters and lots of different, slightly different versions of characters you might be familiar with, but still that kind of ring true to the gestalt of those characters, and bringing in lots of different characters that didn't really get enough play, I think, like Donna Troy and Cassie Sandsmark being those anchor characters that are keeping the title a little more stable than a constant revolving cycle of people.
That's pretty clever, because I think Wonder Woman, this is a spinoff of that idea, right? Wonder Woman is kind of, is about that. When she's best written, I think it's about that. you know, bringing that in to Wonder Girl. So I'm curious to see what you actually did with the two Wonder Woman entries, as well as the early Teen Titans stories, which were about helping youths. And, you know, there was something about a youth movement going on in those original Teen Titans stories more than Super Villain of the Week, combining those two things.
Yes, definitely. And like The Movement, one of the more interesting titles during the New 52 by Gail Simone.
Right.
We are on the outskirts of society, fixing their actual problems society isn't going to fix, kind of thing. That kind of idea and movement behind it. There's like Yara Flor and Tanya Spears and various characters that just kind of like got used for a little while and then put on the shelf again. I would definitely be using in this, wanting the writer to use.
Here we are, Wonder Woman. There are two versions, the two entries, so we get to do two titles. What's your first one?
Diana, Warrior for Peace. Like you were saying, that's kind of what Wonder Woman is, and so that's what this title is all about. I'm going to be dropping the swords and the shield. She's just going to be using the lasso and the bracelets and basically defensive fighting effectively. She's going to be out there trying to defuse one of those other forces that we were talking about. And I toyed with calling it the War Force, but I think the Grit Force or the Grim Force is kind of a little bit more what I'm trying to get at. It's that, no, reality must be hard or it's not real. Grim and gritty and all of those aspects of the grim and gritty 70s/90s version of a lot of those things. But also just the idea in our culture that work makes worth, and if you are not out there grinding, then you are somehow less than your fellow humans and all these kinds of things.
Yeah, it sounds a little like mine, but not this one. My first Wonder Woman series is actually my spin-off, if you will, because like the Golden Age one isn't really the current one. So in this case, I'm going the opposite end, and it's, you mentioned Yara Flor earlier. Yeah, it's Future State Wonder Woman. It's all about Yara Flor in that near future of the DCU. It is by creator Joelle Jones. It's just like her series was, quirky and gorgeous, and since I'm not doing any other Future State books, Jones can go wild and have Yara interact with other elements of that alternate future, that JLA, everything, do anything she wants with it. That simple. I don't need to go on.
Cool.
As for my Wonder Woman 2, this is my Diana book. And like I said earlier, it's so tough to get her right, I feel. One of the big three. I felt a lot of pressure. And I didn't want to cheap out and do some completely different reboot of the IP or anything like that. So I didn't want to do Amazons versus the World. I hate that stuff. I did not want to do She's the Daughter of Zeus. I thought that was pretty cringe. Like you, no sword, no shield. I don't want her to front as some sort of warrior. She is a defensive fighter. The lasso, her voice is really her real, I don't even want to call it a weapon, but her real tool. And she uses her fists as a last resort. So, okay, what do I want? My idea is to use pretty much every possible take, because I can't decide. So I'm giving Wonder Woman a sort of triple-sized anthology series that has superhero stories like in the Bronze Age, spy stories with white pantsuit Diana, tales that tap into the Greek myths, retro-look Golden Age stories, Linda Carter, Wonder Woman 77, that's in there, Wonder Woman Monster Hunter, Wonder Woman romance comics, young Diana stories, which I thought was the best part of the recent Wonder Woman comics, even the occasional Ally McBeal Wonder Woman or World War I Gal Gadot Wonder Woman or Wonder Tot. Let's bring Wonder Tot into this. Superman and Batman do have multiple titles that I don't edit, but Diana is basically going to have a 100-page giant that celebrates all the best takes on her character and maybe sometimes tries to salvage some not so great takes as well.
I really like that. Like you were saying, Wonder Woman has not been handled as awesome as she actually is over the years. And yet there have been some really interesting takes that just fall flat, or really interesting ideas that just are lightly mishandled or things like that. Yeah. So I would really like to see some of those ideas revisited with actual, like, quality.
Hopefully quality. Maybe even an Artemis story. I don't care, as long as it's good. And of course, it's one of many, so you sort of can spread the butter a little bit. Where did you go with your second Wonder Woman comic?
One of the reasons why Diana had Warrior in her title is because this one is called Nubia, Warrior for Justice.
Oh.
Kind of having those twin titles of peace and justice, both being worth fighting for, but in different styles. Because Nubia is going to be a little bit closer to the more recent, grimmer and grittier Wonder Woman. She is definitely still an agent of the Wonder Force, but she's been a little bit more, let's just say, realistic slash resigned slash tainted, perhaps we might say, by the grittiness of the forces she's dealing with and the, let's just say, the less effectiveness of her voice versus other people's when they would rather listen to somebody that looks like Wonder Woman than like Nubia, her sister, etc. And so this is very much going to be a social justice warrior title in a way that Wonder Woman is, but it also isn't, if you know what I mean. Like a little more of an activist tinge, a little bit more Malcolm X versus Martin Luther King, but not really that simplified either. I would definitely want it to be done by a team of people of color, preferably black women, etc. You know.
Well, Nubia would be in my 100-page giant. Obviously, she adventures as Wonder Woman as well. Okay, next up is Wind. I know some people say Windy. I don't think that's correct. So Wind is an Arion character. So we're going into your fantasy side of things, aren't we?
Yes. And also the first time I'm really going to diverge. I guess maybe Weftworld diverging is the first time. But there's no character named Wind in my universe. In fact, the Wind, spelled that way, is what people refer to the arcane forces that weft across our world. Like, the storm system aspect of that is called the Wind. And one of the weird things about this reality is the way the Wind moves across the world and causes those changes to shift and weft across the world can be ridden like ocean currents, as the people of the Wind Dancer would know. This book is called Tales of the Wind Dancer, and it's about the dragon ship Wind Dancer and the crew of the Wind Dancer as they fly the world and the weft winds, seeking adventure and loot. And it's kind of Doom Patrol mixed with swashbuckling adventure, because these are all the freak characters. And the ones that just like, oh my goodness, you're almost just too disturbing to look at. Like that Wonder Woman villain girl that has like the weird messed up face that literally just kind of like, you know, characters like that, where like they just wouldn't be accepted in society even if the whimsy whims came along, you know, that kind of thing. And they're going to be out there taking care of themselves, trying to look for people who are not necessarily able to survive areas that have been swept over by the Grim Force or things like that, but also just kind of out for loot and adventure. A lot of swashbuckling fun.
All right. Yeah, I like it. And I've set mine in the contemporary DC universe as well, even though I don't have the Weftworld concept behind it. And I did change the title as well. It's called Wind Warrior. It's about a First Nations hero who's been blinded in an industrial accident, but he is chosen to be the vessel of the spirit of an ancient pre-colonial warrior who gives him his sight back and more besides. But only during the periods when Wind Warrior is needed. Wind Warrior is the ultimate combat machine, but also has a relationship with the spirit world. He uses ghost weapons, and sometimes he can convince spirits to help him in his cause. The Afterworld also provides a comedy sidekick for him, which I would model on the spirit that shows up in Reservation Dogs, if you've never seen that show.
Yes, love that.
Recommend it to anyone who hasn't. So yeah, so he's got like, there is a Brave with him as a ghost, who, I love those kinds of characters, you know, the Martin Steins and the Skeets, who kind of comment on the action but can't really take part. So he would have that spirit warrior with him as well. So that's my Wind. Next up is the Wyoming Kid. Well, here's a very, I gotta say, I've read some of the strips. It's very generic. So we do see, in my series, we do see the Wyoming Kid in flashbacks, but the book is called Clan War, and it takes place in modern-day Wyoming and concerns two families, the Pokes and the Claggetts, because guess what? The kid never got justice for his murdered father. So now, his descendants and the murderer's descendants are caught in a cycle of violent revenge in the small town of Paradise, Wyoming. The book shows both sides of the feud and how it's getting really extreme. It's a modern day Western, but it's set in the DCU, so I'm not taking sci-fi and magic off the table. So it's a kind of black comedy that might approach Garth Ennis levels of mayhem, maybe. I'm sure there's a Romeo and Juliet element in there as well, but I might perversely have one of them, one of the two lovers, running a long con on the other that's part of the revenge. Or even better, I think both lovers are doing that. So so it's going to be kind of a crazy modern-day Western with this one.
Interesting. I will admit that this was one of the first ones that I was like, yep, completely dropping the Wyoming kid aspect of like the whole Western thing. As I mentioned early on, one of my first muses was like, maybe one of the whole realities is just Wyoming. And I was going to use wind and the Wyoming kid. And maybe I was like, no. There's not enough there. Then when I was doing the four or five different realities that were all going to be split off but parallel, this was going to be one of my big core ideas, is that there was going to be a Wyoming kid in each of them, but then they kind of like were aware of each other and were going to be like key to bringing the worlds together or something. But then once everything shifted with the Weft winds, that idea kind of went out the window, and this got put on the board as a potential last nut to crack. Well, what it is now is a kid called Wyoming, and this is a gender fluid, but really more just like gender queer, non-binary, non-gender specific character who sometimes does have a very specific gender because they don't control what body they're in. It's sort of a cross between Dead Man and, I don't know if you ever heard of the book Every Day. It's a young adult book about this kid who literally just wakes up in a different body every day. Okay. And he's like living other people's lives. It's not like he's changing who he is. He just like wakes up in the body of that kid that goes to this high school over there and everything like that. So there's a little bit of that and a little bit of, wait, is this person inserted into reality, or did they already exist and this person's just like living a day or two of their life? And there's a little bit of mystery of like, who are these people that this kid keeps being, and what is this Wyoming thing? Because like the first title, like one of the things that helped me solidify on this idea is the title or the phrase, I was named for a place that doesn't exist, though maybe it used to. So they sometimes call themselves just O or Ming or Y or Wyoming or just like the kid. And they kind of have a unmoored take on the world because they don't have anything to grasp onto until they do, until they start figuring out why they're unmoored and what's going on. And that'll kind of be revealed as the story goes on and as other titles come up.
I think we both went with something that was a little askew. It could have been Vertigo, could have been Young Animal in terms of imprints, but here we are, one of the marquee characters of this issue, Yankee Poodle.
And speaking of young animals, Yankee Poodle Power is the name of this title. And it is one of several books that's kind of specifically set in the past of this universe. This is kind of a 70s cap on the motorbike with a van, having adventures on the open road, fighting crimes and spitting rhymes kind of version of Yankee Poodle as a solo hero, kind of hard traveling heroes era of Green Lantern and Green Arrow, except for the fact that this is in the Whimsyverse of idolized everything. So all of the problems are a little sillier, a little more New Adventures of Superboy, those kinds of stories and set things, but definitely a lot of tongue in cheek 70s pastiche kind of stuff in it. And then every once in a while, there's like a little reference to the fact that these are tales told from the current day era of the Zoo Crew universe, but about things in the past. And so there's like this event that hasn't happened yet that happened in the past of the Zoo Crew. You know, we'll get to it later.
All right. Yeah. Didn't Captain America travel the United States at some point?
Yeah.
Kind of like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mine, the book is entitled Yankee Poodle Candy. It takes place in the traditional DCU. Candy is a human entertainment reporter who does travel with a poodle called Rova Barkett, which gave rise to her nickname / internet handle, Yankee Poodle Candy. She's a YouTuber who goes out and gets interviews from superheroes and supervillains, or sometimes maybe just supporting stars. Can be hard getting the Justice Leaguers on record. So a comedy where she gets into trouble, she uncovers interesting truths, a bit as if like my template was maybe like, what if we did a Lois Lane series, but we built it today from the ground up with no backstory, with none of the Superman stuff.
Nifty.
Okay, here we go. The Yellow Peri. And I know Yellow Peri means more to you than she does to me. So we'll see what you did with it, because I wasn't including her in the list originally. I presumed she was a villain until I reread the entry and it was pretty clear. No, she's meant to be heroic. So what to do with a sorceress when we have Zatanna coming up imminently? I threw it out to listeners on social media is what I did, that I was having trouble with a certain magic using heroine, and that I would include my favorite pitch for her in the show. And they no doubt thought I meant Zatanna. Well, what's good for Zatanna is surely good for the Yellow Peri, right? No, I got hoisted by my own petard. All the ideas were so specific to Zatanna that I couldn't use them for the Yellow Peri. So I went back to the entry I reread it again and again, and I noted that the book of magic that she uses comes from space, which is really weird. So, okay, this will be one of those genre-specific anthologies. It's called Cosmic Tales of Terror. It's got a mysterious horror host called Perry, who introduces each issue. The stories are sci-fi, where it intersects with magic and horror. So Earth has both, right? The superhero universe has magic heroes and science heroes. But every time we go into space, we don't get that feeling, give or take, more Drew or someone, you know? So it's going to touch those different genres, maybe in a Lovecraftian way, maybe more in a, I don't know, you know, spacefaring magic users, whatever, but it's going to be an anthology series with Perry hosting it. This was a key concept for you.
To a certain extent, yes. To be honest, I just love the Yellow Perry as a character. She's so adorable, and the whimsy-esque mixing of not really meaning to, but being so bad at it kind of thing. And like, the Gazook character being so obviously malicious, but so adorable and tricksy. I don't know, just like, I loved all of that. And so it was kind of funny that once I rapidly agreed to, yes, let's make Yellow Perry one of the characters and let's do all this, so that I kind of realized that that energy really was going to be best used in the Wonder Girls series. And in fact, Etta York is one of the characters in Wonder Girls. And the Yellow Perry, that version of that character, is very much going to be highlighted in Wonder Girls for part of it. And she might very well end up being part of this title too. But this title is called The Problem with Perrys. And it goes back to where the term Perry came from, which is from Persian myth. And these like magical creatures that live on this in this place called Mount Ka'af, probably doing a terrible version of spelling it or pronouncing it, but it's Q'AF. And that just sounded like a neat place to set a interdimensional group of problem causers and solvers, perhaps is a good way of saying it. They are not really protagonists or antagonists or good or evil. They are just interdimensional, supernatural, but alien beings who do things that other people don't necessarily understand or realize. And so this is going to be kind of an anthology title where it's focusing on different Perrys at different times, but it's going to start out with a green Perry who is actually going to be inspired by the Green Lantern from the Tangent Universe, where they're kind of like on the border of life and death, kind of able to bring back a little life, i.e. greenness, to people who have passed beyond so that they can bring some kind of resolution to their life. But as the title proceeds, you will start to see, oh, there's a blue Perry who's a little fairy named Leah. And there's the yellow Perry apparently has something to do with that other York character over there. And is there a white Perry that's like a cigar chomping editorial? What? Kind of as you go on, you start realizing that there's more Perrys and the colors are important, and that perhaps they are somehow related to why the west winds are blowing.
Well, you certainly did better than I did. But the problem remains. This is a magic user. Zatanna is a magic user. Zatara is a magic user. And we're getting them all back to back. So let's hear your Zatanna.
So yeah, all three of my magic-focused titles are very different. Zatanna is actually inspired by a book I've never read, but which I listened to a fun little podcast reviewing as part of it. It's also inspired by that podcast in general. Flowers and Fishnets is not actually what the title of the book is going to be called, although I might be open to that if the writer likes. The inspiration hook title that got hooked in my head was hashtag Zatanna Nation. The, I guess, late New 52 era version of the Black Canary, where it's like a band on the road and there's like all this like musical intrigue, but as well as superhero intrigue, kind of inspired by that, kind of inspired by the idea of what if Zatanna was the Taylor Swift of her universe kind of thing. And just there is this entire pop cultural milieu swirling everything around her, but not just her bandmates, i.e. Diana Drake and a few other people. I don't know. I was kind of going through a list of DC musicians and finding a couple of characters that I had no real concept for, but maybe would be in there, and like coming across all these other things and got into the idea of a battle of the bands, kind of, I don't know, Scott Pilgrim-esque energy to it to a certain extent.
Yeah, I would go for that.
It seemed a lot of fun and very different than we usually see Zatanna.
And she's a stage performer. That makes sense.
I was also inspired by the idea of some of the bands that will, like, I don't know, like the Mighty Mighty Boston's apparently just has a guy that's like, this is their hype man, their dance. Like, he doesn't like play any instruments. He doesn't really sing. He's just like up there hyping and dancing and everything like that. She would not necessarily be singing or playing an instrument. She would just be doing magic on stage as part of the spectacle.
Let's bring back Sonic Disruptors. Okay, so, well, for me, like I said, it's Zatanna who is going to get the pitch from a listener like you. So congratulations, Mike Dynas. Here's what Mike proposes. Z is a YouTube magician who not only shows you her tricks, she then shows you the secrets behind them. But she always leaves you guessing because she also uses the Homo Magi magic at the end of each video. Audiences don't know if speaking backwards is real or if it's a crafty video editing technique, but it certainly gives her a cult following. Cult being the operative term, because as she is using her stage persona online to help root out an evil cult of magicians who are posting some disturbing videos to the internet, creating an even bigger following than hers. Are they really sinister forces at work, or just a case of professional jealousy? He wants it to be written by Jeff Lemire, pandering to Siskoid, he says, and drawn by Cliff Chang, pandering to me, since he did such a great job with Dr. 13, the magic backup in Tales of the Unexpected. He ends it with drawing the line at $2.99. So good job, Mike. I'll add a subplot where other magicians want to take Zatanna down because the magician's code is that you can't reveal how your tricks are done. So we'll throw in all sorts of crazy assassins based on real magician personas. Everyone from David Copperfield to Penn and Teller as supervillains.
Oh my goodness, that sounds fun.
Yeah, good job, Mike. And a lot of people had really great ideas and maybe do something with Mr. Mixelplick because of the reverse. And I'd considered it. So anyway, everyone had some good ideas. I just went with this one, which I thought was a little kookier maybe. As for Zatara, I intend to publish Zatara Mystery Theater. So it's basically Mandrake the Magician, very pulp noir stuff, except that every issue, Zatara solves problems with crazy magic. So if you've ever seen his Golden Age strip, it is whacked out. So I want that feeling, but more disturbing. Like when he turns a brick wall into a humanoid character that helps him for the length of the adventure, which happened quite often. I want it to plead for continued life. And maybe Zatara even gives it to him. Maybe not, but it's going to be something like dark weirdness. So maybe a strain of China Mieville in there. What's your idea for Zatanna's dad?
That's a really interesting take on Zatara. I actually have read a good, I don't know, dozen and a half issues of the Action Comics from the Golden Age when I was reading along with Golden Age Superman. And some weird tales, some kind of messed up things he does with his magic sometimes. So yeah, a good, interesting take. Mine is also reaching into the past, but in a different sort of way. Zatara Family Adventures is going to be one of those, I mentioned when I was talking about the Yankee Poodle, that there's going to be another title set specifically in the past. And Zatara Family Adventures is going to be inspired by another one of those forces. The nostalgia force swept across the world and is kind of tuning everything back to a more idealized and idealistic time. This is inspired directly by Aquaman's Outrageous Adventure episode of Batman the Brave and the Bold, where it's like the road trip across America kind of energy with John and his wife Sindela, or Cindy as she is sometimes called, and their little kid Zaddy, Zatanna, when she's a little like, you know, 9-year-old girl or whatever, and them going and visiting various other magical characters in the DC universe who happen to be distant relatives or just family friends and things.
So books of magic as imagined by, you know, like a Tiny Titans.
Yes, actually, that's a very good mashup title understanding of what it would be. Yes.
I mean, that's almost in the humor universe. It's almost crossing over into that whimsical universe, which the Zoo Crew has to be a part of. And that's our next entry.
Captain Carrot and her zany Zoo Crew is going to be, yes, definitely that whimsy force going in, but also a touch of something else that will be coming up in a few minutes. But the Zoo Crew is going to be a mix of the characters that we are familiar with from the traditional Zoo Crew books, but also with some new characters mixed in or slightly twisted versions of those characters. For instance, you might have caught the Her Zany Zoo Crew. Harriana Hare is going to be the Captain Carrot of this universe. She's kind of the Monica Rambeau version of Captain Marvel from the era of Avengers I started reading when I was a kid, where she's totally confident and capable as a hero, but also kind of doubts herself sometimes as far as like, am I really okay being the leader of this team? But oh yes, I'm a badass, kind of that energy. But then also we're going to have Pig Iron, who's going to be, you know, Pig Iron, but also kind of the Ben Grimm energy of like the 70s and 80s era of Ben Grimm, who's kind of like the lovable, a little bit problematic sometimes, but you know, he's learning and growing. He's basically good at heart. And speaking of learning and growing, Fastback is going to be in there, kind of as that William Messner Loeb's at the cusp of Mark Waid run era Wally West, where he's definitely moved past the man boy era, but not fully matured yet too. He's kind of like trying to be the mentor without having fully got everything down himself. Allie Cadabra, already perfect. She's perfect. She stays exactly the same. Rubber Ducky, I was thinking of, you know, a slight twist, kind of a little bit more of the Miss Marvel fangirl energy, but also a lot of that elongated man, wacky, fun, detective-y kind of energy to it, too. And of course, Yankee Poodle is going to be part of this team, but this is post that event I was alluding to and part of her own event. So kind of as a parallel to her Captain America parallels, there was this event called simply the Cryo Crash. At some point in her motorcycle slash van adventures, she collided with a cryogenics cap tanker and was flash frozen for an unknown period of time, then thawed out in the fourth issue of Captain Carrot and her Zany Zoo crew, and she rejoins the modern era. And it is very much, again, that Captain America out of time kind of energy to it, where she's a little bit on the wrong foot. She's found out that the puppies that she had just had, like assumed before she left on her last adventure, have now grown up, and the Stripesy twins are out there fighting crime on their own with their older sister Star and all kinds of crazy stuff. So she's kind of like figuring out what's going on while also having these adventures with these new teammates that she's getting familiar with. The last team member is Kim Aaliyah. She's a shape-shifting, well, sometimes he's a shape-shifting gender fluid character, because very much insistent on, am I a boy? Am I a girl? Am I a camel? Am I a lizard? You never know. Am I probably not any of these things? So yeah, a chameleon, camel, boy, girl, we're not really quite sure. Very mysterious. Never really admits to for sure if her name is Leah or they're really just using a nom de plume, so to speak.
I think you did a good job of recreating a little bit each of the characters. I just went like with a blanket concept that the Zucru should be as it always was, sort of a goofy, superpowered animals comedy action book with silly animal puns and a cockeyed look at the DCU, especially looking at whatever trends and events are currently being sold, probably by other editors, more concerned with marketability than I am. I think the big difference with the Roy Thomas original is that there would be more overt animal versions of Earth One villains, so that it feels more of a piece with the line. And I want none of that dark revisionism, like Allie Cadabra eating little cheese. That never happened. And I want to balance the genders a bit more as well. So in my case, it's Little Cheese who's a female character. So this is an all-ages book that we would sell essentially to the same demographic as DC's Looney Tunes and Scooby-Doo comics. And the book, this is the special bit, the book will coincide with the release of an actual animated series. Kind of unbelievable that that doesn't exist.
I know, right? I did leave out one part of my thing. I usually don't think about the characters or the creators or whatever, but I would definitely want the Scooby-Doo team-up people to be in charge of the Zoo Crew.
We stay in the Whimsyverse for Zoot Sputnik. So I'm publishing Zoot Sputnik's All Fun Comics by Fred Hembeck, basically as if this comic was being delivered straight from the universe of Amazing Man. Zoot is an adventure-type hero whose stories keep changing genres. So we have space, we have war, fantasy, swashbucklers, supernatural thrillers, whatever. He's Cave Carson, Rip Hunter, Adam Strange, and Mr. America all rolled into one. And his adventures are kind of amusing, fourth wall breaking fun. The stuff that we're used to from Fred Hembeck. Like, just give him a blank check.
That is actually very similar to an idea I had for Zoot Sputnik and almost went with. But then something else you used and referenced earlier kind of entered my brain and I went in a different direction. Zoot Sputnik was an action hero who's a little out down on his luck, a little bit past his time, because he is a jetpack space hero for an era that doesn't really care about jetpack space heroes. And so he's just kind of listless and just, you know, coming out of one bar, going into the next, not quite sure what to do with his life anymore. When a strange little man in a yellow helmet comes up and starts talking to him in this really insipidly inspiring way. And at first, he just kind of like tries to get him to go away and just like doesn't pay attention to him. But when he realizes that he's the only one, since he's this strange little man in the yellow helmet, he starts to figure out that maybe there's more going on here, slash maybe he's just losing his grip on reality. But then things start going a little weirder and he realizes that maybe he does need to pick up his jetpack again and deal with the fact that the world is getting weirder outside his window. And then the weft winds sweep across him again, or for the first time, or what. And so we start to follow him as he does quite literally skip between different genres, as opposed to just different kinds of tales told about a character. This is like the same person suddenly being swept into, or having the weft wind sweep over them and then become the gritty, being a little more whimsical and trying to figure out, is Mazing Man this weird little Brave from Reservation Dogs kind of energy avatar character appearing to him because he's going crazy? Or is this some external force that is acting on him, or what? Again, we go back to some of the mysteries will be revealed as the series progresses.
Shift world. Yeah. Indeed. You can't go wrong with Zoot Sputnik. It seems like built in that this is going to be a fun series, you know. And suddenly, we're back to the A's. Angel and the Ape is up next. Again, what used to be a comedy series. Hasn't always been, but, you know, we'll see what we happen to do with it. And because both of them have stats on the page, we could theoretically split this into two books. Or only star, have a book that only stars one of them. Is either of us crazy enough to do something like that?
I'm not.
Okay, no, neither am I, so go ahead.
Mine's just called Angel and Ape Investigations. And it is borrowing a little bit of energy from Nightwing Investigations, Colleen Wing and Misty Knight, kind of like two-fisted kung fu fun kind of thing. But also a little bit of the energy that was left over from Zoot Sputnik, of the Mazing Man, quirky neighborhood, wacky adventures with weird neighbors kind of thing. Because Angel and Ape Investigations is in this like kitschy neighborhood of whatever city it's in. And it's kind of like a cross between like the neighborhood and Greenwich Village, with their landlords slash building owners are the gay couple Cannon and Saber, and all kinds of other wacky neighbors and stuff. Dog-faced character from Mazing Man would be one of the neighbors and everything like that. Just original Angel and Ape, but with a lot of other fun, laid-back characters from the DC universe as their neighbors.
I probably read that. I've got a few here on my sheet for later when I get to spend my money. One of the things I like to do to save myself time is just look at what happened in the past. Well, how were the characters used? And then if there's a really good take that didn't last long enough, let's bring it back. So I think the miniseries by Phil Foglio, to me, was kind of the perfect take for this. Sam is a Gorilla City expat. Angel is a sexy, self-possessed private eye. They're on cases no one else wants to take because they're too weird. Other ape characters show up all the time. So just a fun mystery book that I would push to be more like The Maze Agency, you know, with Fairplay whodunits, but obviously somewhat wackier.
Phil Foglio series was very much the energy that I liked from them.
Next up is Blackjack. So I'm obviously I have to remove Blackjack from Atari Force here, for me anyways. The result is a cyberpunk series about a net-running gentleman thief slash mercenary. He's sexy. He's got principles. But damn, those big corporations are just asking for it. So I recently read Neuromancer for the first time. And it was my first William Gibson book, in fact. And I think we could do with Blackjack a series that's very similar to that, with Dart as an elusive femme fatale woman of his dreams, the Molly Millions to his case, and stories that explore corporate greed, the economic class divide, how AI is developing into a cultural force or threat. So this is the one that's most disconnected from the standard DCU because it happens in some nebulous future.
That is intriguing. And like you, I am using both Blackjack and Dart and separating it from the Atari Force, but of a very different flavor. Did you ever read Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane, I believe is what it was called?
Sure.
So this is Blackjack Loves Dart. And it is that kind of flavor of, I don't know, like romance comics mixed with superhero. Like, I don't know, it's more like a... This is more like swashbuckling Errol Flynn style weapons, but not necessarily grim and gritty, like whimsy plus weapons dancing across the world as they seek adventure and excitement and money and things like that, kind of mercenaries. But Blackjack is actually trans lesbian, and Dart is pretty much just Dart from Atari Force. Little secret about me that's not really that secret. As a trans lesbian growing up, Dart was very much one of those characters. It was like, okay, sometimes I'm not quite sure if I have a crush on this character, or I just feel like I really want to be that character. Dart was an epitome of that kind of, like, oh my goodness, so badass, so hot. I don't know how I feel about you besides the fact that you're amazing and I wish I was you slash could date you kind of thing when I was a very small child and didn't understand those feelings at all. And so definitely sublimating a little bit by having Blackjack get to be the trans lesbian that gets to date her. And so, yeah, them two hopping across the web world and having all kinds of wacky adventures and lots of cute sex.
Dart had an effect on a straight white male as well. I got a similar effect because she's so cool. Atari Force has a lot of cool, quirky, amusing, badass characters that it's really a shame that it's not part of the real DC universe, that they're sort of behind that Atari paywall.
Indeed.
Yeah, okay, next up is Captain Triumph, a forgotten Golden Age character. Well, I say Golden Age, and then I know that he made some sort of return in that miniseries. What's your take on Captain Triumph?
This officially was my last nut to crack. I definitely had a problem with Captain Triumph. When I was first going around the idea of there being the Wizard World and Wonder World and all that, one of the ideas that I had toyed with for the Wyoming Kid, of there being different versions of them in different realities, was also kind of something I was centering around the idea of there being a Captain Triumph in each of those worlds, but that they were actually like calling upon the spirits of the other three Captain Triumphs from each of the other worlds and kind of like the strength of four people or whatever. But that never really gelled in my mind. And then once the idea of the parallel worlds kind of went away, and then it kind of hit me that not only are there's Captain Triumph and Captain X and Captain Carrot, but you know, there's all these other captains and everything. Maybe they're one of the forces is the Captain Force. And it is kind of analogous / parallel to the Grim Force. This is the solo hero force. It is the Captain Universe-ness of everything, where it will just possess people and convince them that they can be the hero, they can be the one. The Captain Force, I don't actually know. Like, that's such a last nut that I still haven't really settled on a good title for this. It might just be Tales of Triumph, which was the original title that I was going with back in the original idea of this. Or it might just be Captain Triumph or the Captain Force. Again, I am still a little mushy on this. But the idea is that it would be not so much following a hero as the power that invests itself in different people of hero as they are needed to be heroes, mirroring and paralleling another book to come, but way more hopeful and idealized, maybe is a good way of saying it.
So in my case, I had a good hook because it's Lance and Michael Gallant, their real names. And Gallant, or Gallant, happens to be an Acadian name, which is my cue to honor my own culture. So Michael is a contemporary French-Acadian astronaut in this version who is hit with radiation in space and disintegrated. NASA only recovers an empty spacesuit. When his twin brother Lance tries to find out what happened, he is visited by the ghost of his brother, who is now able to possess him and turn him into a superhero. And of course, we have a better costume than this, right? But here's the twist. Michael, and I'm calling them Michael and Lance because I don't know what they would have French names in this version, but I haven't decided on them. Michael has been bouncing up and down space-time, entering other members of the bloodline and gifting them with the same powers and historically appropriate versions of the costume. So while there's a modern day Captain Triumph, we also have Michael's adventures in historical Acadia, involving him in the mass deportations conducted by the British in 1755, where we'd have World War II stuff that harks back to the original strip, even finding out that his brother is going to have kids, or maybe he's going to have kids inside his brother, ooh, because their descendants are part of the big leap into space decades down the line. So we also see the future. The jumps are a little out of his control, so he's always drawn back. It's a quantum leap, so he's always drawn back to Lance eventually because he's the closest genetically. But we'll see female Captain Triumphs, we'll see caveman Captain Triumphs, Cajun Captain Triumphs, and the series will essentially cover hundreds, if not thousands, of years of history.
Wow, that is way more interesting than I thought that concept would possibly be.
Well, I just had a discussion this week, I think. We were just talking about different Acadian events that are completely unknown outside of Acadia, but that would make great movies. You know, we had a pirate who was sort of a rebel giving the British a black eye. And I mean, how is that not a movie? It's not a movie because in Acadia, we don't have much of a movie-making apparatus. We make documentaries and now sitcoms because they're cheap. And Quebec always does it wrong for us. And obviously the U.S. doesn't think of... It seems to be a small part of history, but it's very dramatic. So how about putting it in a comic book series and bringing attention to it? That was my idea here. As for Captain X, another captain, this is an aviation ace hero, but with a modern spin. This Captain X is African-American, and he's a drone pilot. Buck Dare lost his legs in Afghanistan, now he's home, and he's using his technical know-how and a mysterious personal fortune to fight crime with heavily modified fighter drones. These have screens and speakers through which Captain X can address people, so there is an identity there, but he's never present on the scene, and there are several models purposed to what he's trying to accomplish. So spying, crowd control, fighting specific supervillains, whatever it is. He also has a rich personal life that includes family, fellow veterans, secret patron he doesn't know anything about, and so he doesn't entirely trust. He's also haunted by his actions in the war. For him, the drone doesn't create a distance from the people he's killed in drone strikes. So in flashbacks, we also explore that facet of modern warfare.
Wow, that would be a very interesting and possibly disturbing book to read.
Very adult, yeah, I think so, yeah.
Sounds like it could very well fit into the Blackjack universe, some kind of like that cyberpunk rigor kind of grimmer version of things.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong.
So mine is yet another one of those titles where I thought I had a pretty good idea and then it went out the window. Though not necessarily because of the shift from the split world to the web world. Captain X was going to be a Dread Pirate Roberts kind of who's really behind the mask resistance leader to the overpowering onslaught of Warworld / the Warforce. And then I listened to another episode of one of my favorite podcasts ever, and everything changed. The Done in One Wonders podcast Wonder Show inspired me to call this Captain Zoom Yukinori and his Bronze Age baddies, or some version thereof. And it is basically just a comic book continuation of that amazing podcast and all of the wacky adventures of Terra Man and Bizarro and Solomon Grundy and Little Professor Man. And just, it still hurts my heart that there's only so much of that forever, please.
Well, thanks for that tribute. Let me catch myself up because it's a difficult topic for me. Let's just jump over to Dragon Sword and your idea with it.
When I was coming up with the broad strokes of it, this was the first book that I was like, oh, this is going to be an anthology title. This is going to be inspired by Grendel Tales, but with a twist. The idea of like the soul sword, or like some kind of weapon you pull out of yourself, is, you know, present in lots of different kinds of fiction, especially apparently in Asian fiction. But Magic from X-Men has like the soul sword she pulls out or whatever. And I don't know, basically that idea was very evocative of like pulling the dragon sword out of your own self when you need it, was kind of like what popped into my head at that point. But it being available to different people at different times. And then that brought in the idea of the 100 Bullets series and the idea of like, what would you do if you had impunity kind of thing. And so this is going to be an anthology book of every 3 issues or so. It focuses on a new person who has this voice in their head saying, this world has gone mad. You don't have the power to change your life, but what if you did? And kind of like that kind of thing of like almost not some mysterious person that comes up with a briefcase, but basically some kind of spirit force is like, if you accept, you can pull the dragon sword. And they're literally like pulling part of their essence out of themselves, giving themselves so much power. But once their mission is over, once they've used the dragon sword to fulfill their purpose, then they're just going to be messed up in some way, or perhaps die, or it's a little unclear at first, but starting out, it looks like they're just like, well, I guess I don't have any choice, or this is worth it. But then as the story goes on and you see like it, as it switches, you start finding out maybe what some of the other people happened to them after they pulled the dragon sword and things like that.
There's a monkey's paw element, which is funny because Dragon Sword hangs out with a chimp. But I am a sucker for what I call Dead Man's Gun stories. Well, Black Hood and Dial H, and you know, like the passing of like an object that during the series, it gives power to different people and you have different takes on it. I love that stuff. So this is one of the front runners from your line. As we're coming close to towards the end, my Dragon Sword, well, remember when I said one person managed to escape Wizard World? Well, it's the hero known as Dragon Sword. Seems the sword managed to cut a passage in the field of whatever's keeping the fantasy carnies inside. He also brought his sentient chimp companion with him. I kind of smell a crossover with Angel and the Ape there. But what is the comic otherwise like? Well, I want it to be one of those gorgeous fantasy books like Alice Alex's Siegfried or P. Craig Russell's Ring of the Nibelung or anything that Charles Vess has ever done. Or even Tom Yeats's art on this entry, I think, fits the bill. Except it takes place in the mundane world of today. So it's like some medieval monk chronicled these adventures in a beautifully illustrated grimoire and didn't know it was mundane. Dragon Sword himself talks and acts like he's in a fantasy series, and indeed so do the quote-unquote peasants, or guards, the police, or villains. So it should come off as a strange comics artifact that seems to be applying the wrong style and tropes to the material.
Interesting. Like, applying the wrong tropes is a very interesting idea.
And then the final hero character is Guy Gardner. For me, Guy sacrificed himself in The Last Crisis. Sorry, Guy fans. History's been rewritten, and it's my cue to bring in Gal Gardner. Or bring her back. She was an identity of his at some point. But this time, she's probably one of the denizens of the matriarchal Earth 11. And in the new continuity, she's completely replaced Guy. She's a Green Lantern with a difficult dynamic with Hal Jordan. I think that would be fun to explore that. We're also going to have a Zamorans attack storyline where the Star Sapphires try to recruit her. And I seem to be big on flashbacks this month. A lot of series have had flashbacks, maybe because I've been reading a lot of Jeff Lemire, so Mike Dynas was right. And yes, so flashbacks to see how continuity played out with Gal instead of Guy. What happened with Carrie Limbo? Did Gal suffer brain damage? I want to say no to that. How did her JLI membership play out? I think Guy's a fun character, but I think I'm ready for a fresher take on this concept.
Several times you surprised me with, like, wait, there was no way I was going to read this book, but now I might want to, kind of thing. Yeah, I guess my opinion of Guy Gardner might be spoiled by the title. Everyone hates Guy Gardner because everybody hates Guy Gardner, it seems like, except for Sean Engel. And I definitely wanted to have that kind of energy in the book where he isn't actually a hero. He is the villain. He has taken advantage of the Grim Force / Captain Force. He's basically taken some of the power that was flowing across the world and used whatever version of his power, like the Yellow Ring or Warrior, like whatever Guy Gardner-ness he had at the moment, he used it to basically make himself a warlord-esque. I am right. America went away when the Weft Worlds blew across, and I'm not one of those funny animal people in that fake America over there. I'm going to make America and, like, you know, freedom for the people who would be free doing the things that I already like, and unfreedom for the people who would do the things that are weird, kind of thing. And so it's kind of a resistance book, like I was going to have in Captain X, but with the person being resisted being the idealized version of toxic masculinity that is Guy Gardner.
He's the Wonder Forces villain.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's nice that you can, like, bring it back to that original, that first concept when we get to that final entry. But it is not our final entry because we get to do a bonus series probably based on a villain. So who did you pick?
Mechanique. More to the point, The Mechaniques of Fate is the title of the book. And this is going to be the fifth week book where there's going to be four issues of this coming out that kind of reveal a little bit more about what's going on every few months. By the way, Fate is not spelled F-A-T-E like a regular word, but F period A period T period E period. And as a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek pastiche of some of the previous versions of things like that, it's one of those things where you're never quite sure exactly what Fate stands for. Is it Free Agent Tachyon Engineers? Or Free Association Tarot Experts, etc. Just like, who are these mechanical agents of some shadowy techno-mystical organization that seems to be either behind the Weft Winds or the agents of whoever is behind them or third-party service engineers for a completely different, like, what is going on here? And who are these weird robot women that keep showing up in various other books and doing mysterious things and disappearing? And what do they have to do with the Wyoming kid? All of those answers will eventually be revealed as we go on. And we start to find out that this mysterious entity that ended up unmaking and remaking reality like that was, in fact, another concept from the Tangent Universe, Wonder Woman. The idea of someone who can literally unmake reality by wondering what is real and what do things mean and what would happen? Like, I wonder why people are fixed on nostalgia when there are people out there in the world that are causing things. And, like, I wonder how people can have hope for a beloved community when, like, in just that kind of concept of someone who is so unmoored from what reality is and powerful enough to unmake reality by wondering about it. And then realizing that they need to have some kind of experience and not just wonder. And so they have started inserting themselves into these realities to experience them as the Wyoming kid, without that knowledge of who they are and everything, so they can truly experience it. And so they needed third-party tech support, effectively, to be able to run the borders of things. And so that's who these Mechanics of Fate are. As you go on, and you, like, every 3 months or so, you get another issue of the Mechanics of Fate, and you start to see, wait a minute, these two events from these two other books were actually caused by the same agent who's out there doing things. And, like, who is this mysterious thing? And you start to realize as you go along that all this stuff is tied together.
You make me a little sorry that I didn't pick Mechanique, because, like, you're talking about it and I was like, oh man, what would I have done with Mechanique had it been one of my characters, you know, included her in something about Metropolis. You know, because she is based on the robot in that movie. So let's do something with the Superman universe. I don't know. What I did pick was Neutron, but it was really just to steal his IP. Because when I was a 12-year-old, I created a superhero called Neutron. He was all black, like Sunspot. He had enormous electrons spinning around him. Obviously, I didn't know about the quantum model, evidently. But electrons that could block bullets or slam into the bad guys. I still have that sketch somewhere, and I kept returning to Neutron whenever I either played or ran a superhero role-playing game. And there are several character sheets of him in different systems in my boxes. My favorite version of Neutron was as an NPC, a boss for my player's superhero team, which have been called the Free Spirits. They've been called the Crusaders, depends on the decade. They are housed in the JLA's abandoned satellite HQ. He was a scientist. He stayed at the base, grumbling at his teammates' mistakes, lending informational support, a bit of an Oberon, a bit of a Maxwell Lord, a bit of a Catherine Colbert type, a bit of a Vril Dox also, I think. Anyway, he hardly ever used his powers. And when the campaign closed, he was sucked into the microverse by his own powers, and the heroes went to look for him, and then we stopped playing, so he was never found. So that's where I would make my comic series start, with a team of B-listers of my player's invention inside the DC universe, trying to bring him back. Flashbacks, yes, of course. Flashbacks to when he was around, perhaps to expose clues, how to get him back. What happens when he does come back, that's in the series. So the tone borrows from Giffen and DeMatteis's JLI, and the original Neutron from the Who's Who can show up as a villain. Maybe his containment suit is the solution to Neutron's problem. Who knows? This is just like bringing a bit of my... I've done this a number of times on the show, so why not do it again? Take a little bit of my role-playing experience and bring it into the DC universe, per se.
There you go again. I am having a hard time figuring out which book I'm going to buy. I am a huge fan of role-playing and running and playing role-playing games, but sadly, most of my gaming group are not as big a fan of superheroes as I am. So I have played in maybe 2 superhero role-playing games and tried to run one. I have had nowhere near enough superhero role-playing experience in my life as I would like to. Having something like this where I can explore like other people's, I don't know, just that does sound like fun. And I love the idea of characters with like floating things around them as just like aesthetic.
A Yunstone, like in D&D. That, for me, it's the opposite. I've played so much superhero role-playing ever since the 90s. Yeah, I think late 80s probably when we started. And like the same team evolved with different players over the years. I don't want to play any more superhero games. I've played too many. Yeah, an embarrassment of riches. Well, here we are then. Look at your list. We get to play the well-established game now that states that we only have money for one series from the other editor's line. What are you buying, Inza?
Up until the end, despite some of the other intriguing ones, it really was just going to have to be that Wonder Woman thing of like, oh my goodness, I can't wait to see her actually well handled. But Gal Gardner, wow. I need to see the DC Universe with a better version of a guy. That would be amazing. I would just like, wow. Like, I would love to see Gal Gardner just doing things better. That sounds so much more fun. I would hurt myself wishing I could buy that Wonder Woman book too, but I think I would have to hurt myself more by admitting that I was going to buy a Guy Gardner inspired book. What is wrong with me? What is wrong with you that you've done this to me?
Well, I mean, your list was tough as well to parse out, because among them, the Zatara series, that's really my type of... Zatara and Zucru are both like my type of book, the kind of stuff that I read today with great pleasure. And then Dragon Sword was, like I said, that was one of the front runners. But you punched me in the heart with the Professor Zoom series. I'm only human, so that's the one I'm buying.
I know the feeling.
Let's enjoy our fictional comics. And you, dear listeners, you get to go to fireandwaterpodcast.com. Tell us what you think. Would you read any of these books? And if you were in charge, what series would you offer using these characters? And if you like this content, of course, think about visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/FWPodcast, like Diablo Frank, who sponsors this show. And you might want to move your patronage to another program, Frank. I hope you had fun, Inza.
I have had so much fun. This has been a dream come true.
I was glad to get you in. You mentioned it in the comments section. See, if you comment on these shows, you might get to be on a show one day. So thanks for trying this experiment with me. And also thanks to everyone who's ever written in to comment or send in their own ideas over the past few years. Because yes, this is the last episode for a while, but I'm not saying it's the last episode ever. Who's Who has updates, there were further additions, and wouldn't it be fun to cross over to Marvel and do the same thing with the official handbook of the Marvel Universe? So we're taking a break, but we'll see how long it actually lasts. So until next time, whenever that is, but there surely will be a next time, who's editing?
We are!
Superman's origin is that he's an immigrant. Batman's origin is that he suffered a tragedy. Whereas Wonder Woman, her origin story is a birth story. And I started looking at how many of the previous writers had actually given birth, and there really wasn't too many. And I noticed that her creation was very idealized and didn't represent what I and many of my friends and family have gone through while giving birth.